And you control my waffle. Okay, so let's start.
Totness Talks. Totness Talks.
I'm here talking to Nigel Jones, joint proprietor, owner of the Eastgate Bookshop, which I'm happy to describe as probably the best bookshop that Totness has ever had, as I've known quite a few in the years that I've been here. But in these difficult times for retail, Nigel, can you tell us why you decided to open a shop? And how long have you been here, first of all?
Just over 4 years.
Just over 4 years?
Yes.
That's not long.
So, no.
And you opened just before COVID?
Yeah, just during COVID. Just before Christmas 2020. We opened on the 13th of December. We ran for maybe those weeks up until Christmas. And then in New Year, we were locked down again until the end of March or even the beginning of April. So quite a long lockdown from opening. Yeah.
Nope.
Wasn't the start we were hoping for. But we did get our 2 weeks before Christmas, which just about paid for the stock we'd bought and, some of it, and helped us to pay our first month's rent. So that was quite vital, those 2 weeks.
So why did you open?
Well, we both worked in the book trade for a long time. I'd started unpacking in a train called Otticas. It was the 16th shop in Llandudno in North Wales. I really liked it. In the end, I think I became assistant manager there. Then I started moving into head office as a buyer. Went to open other shops as well in places as diverse as Dumfries, Chatham, Cambridge. So quite itinerant, travelling around, learning the trade, learning it so from the bottom up. So obviously I'd been unpacking, working on tills, but I'd also then worked for head office, and there I'm buying for 150 shops. So if we like a book, we order 3,000 of it, not just one or two like I might hear. So we'd always worked at different levels. We'd always wanted our own bookshop. I'd come to Totness to work for a very good online business called Natural History Book Services, specialising in natural history books.
They were based...
They still are, yeah, on the estate.
And they're still there?
Yeah, yeah. They've moved over into doing quite a lot of equipment for conservation professionalists, like back detectors and things like that. But they still do books. They used to ship all over the world, particularly into Europe, which was slightly kiboshed by Brexit. But that was so I'd worked in the book trade and all sort of things, even online and in PLCs, like reporting up to a board and unpacking on shop floors as a sort of startup. So it just seemed like that was where my skill set was. Claire also had worked in lots of bookshops, and she ended up being the buyer for WH Smith, buying all their children's books across all their shops. So she was quite high up there. She remembers putting an order in for 2 million Harry Potters once. I think that was there.
Oh, wow. So Claire's your wife.
Yes, Claire's my wife, who does work for the shop and does a lot of really useful things on admin, like QuickBooks and VAT and keeping our accountant happy, which I can't do. But she's also a midwife at Torbay Hospital, so she's a very busy girl.
Ah.
Yes.
That's a vast experience. I had no idea it was so
extensive. No, our experience is quite deep. I think you can just run a bookshop with no experience. I mean, you can, but if you want to try and make it profitable and know how the industry works, it's probably good for you. You've had your feet in the business for a long, long time.
Didn't you work for a while at Dartington?
I worked for Totness Bookshop, yes. So when I was when I was working online, I liked working online. It was a new skill set I hadn't known before, but it was I wouldn't say it was boring, but it wasn't very social, like all online things is. And I had moved to Totnes because I liked the community, and I felt moving into an internet situation where I'm talking to people all over the world, but actually not being face to face and meeting people in my community. Basically, we're just working out of a shed on a computer. I wanted to work in a bookshop, and this position came up at Totnes Bookshop, which I was lucky enough to get. And again, after a while, I think I ended up being manager of that. And that was fun for a while, actually. That was quite nice. There might have been some different regime changes there that didn't look on the bookshop quite as favourably. That was quite struggled. So then I resigned from that and became a tennis coach, which I'd already qualified for a while ago, but actually and put that into practice for a bit while we had young children.
Yes, how many children have you got?
They're all teenagers now, so.
Well, I remember when I first came to Totnes, I think one of the reasons I decided to come here, to move here, was they had a children's bookshop.
I mean, I came to Totnes because we did Ways with Words, which is something Dartington was doing, and we were the bookseller there. And so that was again a lot of fun, but I'd never been here before. I didn't know. I mean, I'm from the north of England. Coming all the way down to South Devon was something I'd never managed to do. But I was blown away by Dartington, blown away by the gardens and the history. And then I met my sister here, who lives near Ivybridge, for a coffee in Totnes, and I was absolutely bowled over by Totnes and its high street. And made it my absolute priority to try and come and move here.
Oh, really? So, yes. Well, that's interesting. Can you say you're bowled over? You came to Totnes because of the high street?
No, yeah, because it was just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the Cotswolds and you see those towns and you think they're pretty. Not towns, they're villages, but they are sort of... They're not toy towns, sorry, Cotswolds, but there's something like Totnes was a working town. You can see that it was busy, vibrant. You know, there was a cheese shop, there was a butcher's, it was a bit like maybe I think a high street would have looked like in the 1950s, I don't know. But also the architecture is amazing.
Yes.
But you seem to have every shop here. It just looked really, really great. It is really great, I was right.
How long ago was that? We're talking 20 years ago?
Is quite a long time ago. Ways with Words probably coming here would have been 20 years ago, yeah.
And so, let me be clear.
I met Tony Benn, that's how long ago it was. He was signing at the...
So you first came down here because of Ways with Words?
Yes, because I was working
and then you were impressed by the town itself.
Yes.
And Dartington, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed everything. It seemed to be near the moors. It had a river. It was quite near the sea. It had a beautiful town. So it seemed like something I didn't even think could exist outside a fairy tale, to be honest. Yeah.
Well, I can understand that more and more. I mean, I think every day I'm going to meet somebody out walking and we're going to exchange pleasantries about how lucky we are to live and or work in Totnes. So. I think that has the case. And it's still a thriving high street.
Yes.
It's changed a bit in the 20 years, but... Yeah. And some people always grumble about various changes, but it's...
Yeah. Well, the changes, obviously, we noticed the demographic was quite vibrant when we came here, because I think where the Barrel House is now and things like that was a big cafe, wasn't it? And it was just full of students.
Yes.
And, I mean, we liked that. I mean, it's a shame that's gone, but that's the way it goes, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I think maybe the transition town movement and things like that has kept its spirit going quite well. I think it has got spirit.
So where is it? You started off being engaged with books as a job in Wales.
Yeah, in Llandudno, in North Wales.
Llandudno, what? How did you come to?
How was I there? Okay, so I was basically I grew up in Manchester, near Manchester, My parents were in Manchester. I went to college in Blackpool, not Blackpool here, Blackpool on the Fylde in Lancashire. I did natural history illustration. I was a pub sign painter in Northenden for a while doing that in Manchester. That was okay. So pub sign painting seemed like a fun thing to do. My parents retired and they moved to North Wales because my dad is James Hugh Paddy Jones and he's very Welsh and well, he's half Irish, half Welsh, and he wanted to move back to Wales. So Llandudno is not far away from the little cottage which is now abandoned that he grew up in. So yes. The old sheep dip was still there and things like that. He used to tell me about going down to the village to Ganwy to get water, you know, because there's no water. So they just wanted, his roots were there, you know. I think it's a hiraeth, isn't it, in Welsh, which means yes. A longing for the old country.
Yes. Yes.
So I think he went back there. My mum, very English, but was happy to go to Wales. So they'd moved and I was in Manchester still, and I wanted to do illustration rather than... rather than pub sign painting, which was fun. So I decided I wanted to go and paint the landscape of North Wales, and of course went to bunker with my parents for a while to allow me to do that.
Your reading experience, did you read as a child?
Yeah, no, I was one of those nerds, you know, that read at school and we had a reading list and they'd give us 12 books to read and I'd read them all and everyone else would be like, I haven't read any, sir, you know, don't
what
like reading.
About, just we're talking about primary school.
I don't remember reading at primary school. I remember going to the library, but I remember a book was called Hippo, Potto and Muss.
Yeah.
Which probably doesn't even exist anymore, which is basically about three little hippos, which I really liked, and we had to go always get that one out from the library. I just remember that. But I remember reading, and probably high school, probably when I was probably, you know, like 13, 14, and just realising I really liked. But before that, I'd read Beano and Dandy. Yeah,
Beano and Dandy?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Were the Wizard and Hotspur?
I don't know, I only had Beano and Dandy.
Okay. And the reason I ask is whether Wizard and Hotspur were more text-based
than cartoon,
comic strip-based.
I don't think I really made any... I just think that's what we had.
Yeah.
And I had my elder sister's Cosmopolitans to read.
Oh, right.
Which was eye-opening. Really? I learned that's a lot from those when I was 14, that's for sure. And, so they had quite a lot of these sort of raunchy, for young ladies' magazines like Cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
And then my sister was doing English A-levels, so I was probably reading things like Thomas Hardy when I was 14, which probably accounts for parts of my personality.
Thomas. What about children's books? I mean, you've got lovely children's book section.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you feel that that's important.
Yes.
And do you have any, what should we say, tips for parents and reading with their children?
So that's a good, because obviously when they're quite little, they're just happy to be sitting snuggled in while you just blar on about it. You know, a nice picture book. But as they get older, yes, they start... making a judgment, don't we, by the cover and the content.
Yes.
And what we found with our children is if we said something like, Tom's Midnight Garden, they just thought it sounded really boring.
Yes.
But we just start reading.
Yes.
And then they get sucked into it.
Yes.
So I just say, don't. If they say, I don't want you to read this, mummy or daddy, just say, I'm going to read it anyway.
Get to read it anyway.
Because how do you know, until they've read it? I would say the classics end up being the ones that, you know, they end up getting most involved in. Just because they're classics, aren't they?
Yes.
You know. And then the other route is you can go down a sort of bit of a narrow a rabbit hole of series, can't you? So they just want the next one in the series.
Yes.
So it's quite hard sometimes to get them to, you know, this is the number 13th book we've read about Daisy Meadows. Can we just read something? Yes. Oh, no. So, but I think it is quite good to I mean, and then when they're reading themselves, we our kids just went through all sorts of periods of reading too much and reading all the way through the night and then not reading and then reading comics and then, I guess as long as they're reading, it doesn't matter what they do.
Yeah.
We let them read anything really, self-read.
Yes, I think, I'm still finding it difficult with my grandsons who've got so much energy and there's two of them. And they just end up fighting while I'm trying to read them a story.
Right, yes.
They got too much energy at bedtime.
Maybe we need to feed them while we're reading. That was one of our tricks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just...
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Just, it's obviously makes it quite crummy, but while they're eating, they can't normally argue, as long as you give them the same.
Yes.
And then you might have them captive for a while, and then maybe you can just get some of the story to... Sort of where they actually want to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Mm. Well, as I think I mentioned when I first came to Totnes, I had a children's bookshop, and I was so impressed with the town that could sustain a children's bookshop. By the time I came here, not long after that bookshop had closed.
Right.
So I might not have come, had I?
No. Well, it's quite tough running a children's bookshop.
Yes.
Because often it's not, you know, where you actually make your money.
No.
Because the spend's quite low, so it's quite hard to sort of get enough money to pay staff or rent or your overheads, because in the end that's what you have to do, unless you have a nice private income somewhere and you can just run it as a hobby, but which we haven't got, so we had to borrow money to open our bookshop, which we just paid back. Ta-da! Like last month we paid off.
Well done.
Well, we were very pleased about that.
Well done.
I mean, you know, it was. What's that? It's a good five-figure sum. So it's like, you know, not a couple of thousand. It was, you know, tens of thousands. But we just paid that off. So we are sort of in the shop, apart from our rent commitment. You know, we are sort of debt-free, which is quite nice.
Well, that's great. I found that people were reluctant to spend a lot of money on children's books, which was a little bit daft, because children's books get read time and time and time again. They get the good value. You know, you might pay, you know, £5-6 for a paperback, but they do get read over and over again.
Obviously we do sell a lot of children's books. I mean, it's you know, if someone comes to the counter with a nice lovely pile of books and we got some for the grown-ups and some to the children, it's the children's one's great, obviously they contribute, but it's often the nice cookery book or the nice biography it's gonna actually pay our overheads.
Yes.
So trying to run just children's bookshop, I mean, there's a rocket ship in Salisbury, that's a children's bookshop. I think it's quite hard to make them pay. That's all. That's because we did think of opening a children's bookshop when Totnes Bookshop was here. We just thought, well, you know, with our book experience, we could open. And when you run the numbers, it's like, oh, I don't think we're meeting our costs. So, we'll go bankrupt.
Well, I think I googled once, some years ago, with my granddaughters, when they're probably 10, 15 years ago, when they're younger. I was going to London and I googled children's bookshops, and there were two in London. One was in Richmond, which was fortunate because that's where I was going, and it was a very nice shop.
Yeah.
It was tiny. And I thought that was pretty awful, really. I mean, maybe it was...
I'm trying to think where there's another. I think there was a nice one in Cirencester for a while.
Yeah. So it obviously is a struggle. You've got two clubs. Now, one of them sounds good. Books and Beer.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Books and Beer.
What's that about?
Started at, when the New Lion was in what is now Things Happen Here.
Yes.
So that brewery is interesting. So that brewery used to be by the Vets, by the roundabout, the Morrison Garage.
Yes.
And it was literally, we used to go there, so it was like the tap room, which was two planks across the barrels. And you'd basically just get the beer straight out of the barrel.
Yes.
And that was fun. And then they moved the beer brewery up to Webber's Yard, I think, in Dartington. They moved it up there for a while.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then they had meeting rooms where you could. So we started a book group in the brewery. So we just called it Books and Beer. And that was kind of fun. We only moved it because there was just so much noise in there. And some people complained that they couldn't be heard because it's a public space, isn't it? And you're trying to make a very, very important point about a book to the group. Yeah. And I think the final straw was when they put the panel beating in at the same time. So we had a group of people who were copper beating.
Yeah.
And so that's quite hard because they're obviously smashing things with mallets next to us. So there was no hard feelings. We just thought it wasn't great for us. So we moved it off to the Albatross, which used to be the chip
yes. shop,
which the Bull bought. And they let us have that space for free, so that was nice, and we could bring beer over from the pub.
Yeah.
And then that's now fully with Almond Thief Bakery, so that space is no longer so. We just moved it back to here for a while. So it's been here for a while. So it's actually the bookshop again, but we just kept the name Books and Beer.
Yes.
But it's
you don't want beer in a bookshop though.
Well, no, because I haven't got a license, so we can't. It's a bit of a misnomer at the moment.
Right.
So maybe we'll try and find. I'll try and find a space with a bar where we can. But we need our own room. But yeah, Books and Beer is going strong. We get about anything between like 15 and 20 people coming to that. It's quite lively. It's
just good. Sit around and you have a different book.
Yeah, one book each month. We meet on the last Wednesday of every month. It's always fiction, autocratic. I choose it, but I've never read it. I've just got it from customer feedback, but I think it sounds good.
Yes.
I've never read it, and it's new normally, so hopefully no one else has read it. It's always fiction, and we alternate gender, male, female. And that's been going on. And then we've got it on the website where you can see when we score them out of 10. We get an average score out of 10 each time and some general comments. People quite like it. Yeah, it's good. It's good fun.
Yeah, that's great. And you've also got a review club.
Oh, yeah. So that's
is that something different?
Yeah, so that's... So you'll know, probably, won't you, that publishers often produce what we call reading copies or proof copies of books, so uncorrected proofs, before they go to press. And often they distribute those as early readers, so pre-pub. You're not supposed to sell them. You're not, so there's these weird rules. But so what I do is people can come and pick one a month, and all they need to do is send us a review in no more than 200 words, and then that goes on our website, on a little page.
All right.
And that's all we do, and it's good because people basically get a free book.
Yes.
And it could be like the new William Boyd. It could be it's sometimes it's quite interesting, quite in demand.
Yeah.
Or it could be someone who's a new author.
Yes.
So you get a chance to read people. Good for us, because if someone reads something and then just comes rushing in going, oh my God, that's just such the best book I've ever read, for the last 10 years, then we probably think we'll keep an eye on it and maybe order more than, we would have.
And so these are proof copies?
Yeah, so proof copies.
I always thought that proof copies would be worth more than first editions, but they don't seem to.
No,
be.
They seem to be worthless,
yes,
don't they?
But you'd think.
You would. I think we've got some proof copies of things that,
yes.
you went on to be big sellers.
Yes.
And they're worth nothing.
Surely a proof copy of Harry Potter and
That would be. I might not have never ever been proofed, but
no,
that
right.
was that would be.
That'd be something, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that would be worse than.
See, that's the thing that excites people, isn't it, about book values, is that the first edition of Harry Potter and the Phoenix, was it all?
It was the Harry Potter and it's the first one, isn't it? The Phoenix. No, gosh, yeah. I can't remember the name of Chambers of Secrets is the one before. I can remember it in Welsh, Harry Potter and Minor Athronis, but I can't remember it in English. Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, is it the Philosopher's Stone?
Yes.
Is it the first one?
Yes.
I should have known that.
We all should know that.
I think I only read the first one. I didn't read any.
Yeah, I think I might have had one in my hands once when I was working in Chatham.
But there was only something like 500.
There wasn't many, no. And I think someone, when I was in Chatham, there was a guy called, he was a friend of, people might have heard of a guy called Billy Childish, who is quite a was a big musician, and he was Chatham based, and he had a friend who was really into wizards and the magic, and he said he wanted this book, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. I remember him,
yes.
And he bought it, and it would have been a hardback, and it probably was the first edition, or even if it wasn't the first edition, he bought it when it just came out. So I was thinking I would have been, I had it close, you know.
Yeah.
But that is sort of one of those, it's folklore now, isn't it, Harry Potter,
yes,
itself. I mean, when we were with Otticas, RMD at the time, James Hennage, I think he had like a helicopter. So if a shop had sold out, he had stock and would chopper it over. So it's like a sort of, yeah. I mean, it'll never be repeated. You know, all those midnight openings and dressing,
yes,
up, and which we did midnight openings, and for, you know, once it got past the third one in Prisoner of Azkaban, and then once you get into the next ones, I mean, I remember doing an event in a field, and we had the Harry Potter next one all boxed up in a tent, mm, in somewhere in Blandford, in South Wiltshire, and we had to have a guard on it.
Really?
So everyone could sneak in and take one, because we couldn't sell it before the release date,
midnight,
before the embargo. Yes, we could sell it, yes.
Yeah.
We had to guard it.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean,
I don't think that won't happen again.
No, it's sort of like the Beatles, wasn't it? That sort of hysteria.
Harry Potter, but social media now can whip up hysteria too. I think.
Well, short lived though, and then it moves on to the next thing, doesn't it?
Yes.
I think it's just really ephemeral, isn't it? It's like boom, it's gone. It's like a match, big spark, over, next thing.
Expansion plans. You've actually started expanding.
Well, yes.
Can we look forward to the East Gate?
Not sure I've got the energy, Paul, to be honest. I know I spoke to an old colleague once who had opened, he's got Ravens in bookshop in Froome, is it? Yeah. And he's got another one down in Sidmouth, and he's got one in somewhere else in Dorchester, but not Axminster either. He's got another one. He's got maybe a few. He's had a few of an expansion. And we were asking from advice when we were opening this one. He kindly gave us some. But his big advice was, you know, I really wish I'd done this earlier, because actually, you know, he realised that it takes a lot of physical effort and time. And, you know, if he'd been a bit younger, it might have been a little bit more. So I think I'm feeling that, to be honest. Another guy I used to, an ex-colleague called Hereward, he's got a little chain, but he's over in on the border, so he's got one in Monmouth and one in over to Stroud, I think he's got one, so he's got a few.
Mm-hmm.
So a few people, ex-colleagues, seem to have like maybe three or four.
Yeah.
But we've got another one in town, which of course is unprecedented to have one literally eight doors down the road, which was a famous bookshop that people might know called Arcturus. Doug is quite well known. He used to run it, didn't he? And then Joe and Steve ran it for a while.
Yes.
Steve does the kung fu stuff, and yeah. And then they sold it on to somebody called Meg and Will. But I think Meg and Will were maybe thought that book selling would be maybe more fun than it is, and they wanted to sell it, so we bought it because we just thought we just. Well, lots of reasons. Just it carried stock that we didn't really carry.
Mm-hmm.
So we just thought, we just imagined it as our third floor. So that's got all the well-being.
Would you like to have
nutrition.
Both places under one roof? Would that be?
Well, we haven't got room.
No.
I mean, once you go up to a third floor, literally, you obviously, you know, cut down the amount of people who are going to get to your third floor, mm, unless you put a lift in, which I don't think we can afford. So, I mean, the trick that used to be in Otticas, if they had a second floor, is they'd put a lift in and put a cafe on the top floor.
Yes.
It's like, yeah.
It's like Waterstones too,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that would get people up there, wouldn't
yeah.
it? But you need a little bit of capital for that, don't you?
Yeah.
So they have So we renamed it the Rowan Tree just to give it a new name. Rowan Tree was a good name, we thought, because we're keeping all the Wicca and folklore and mythology. And I mean, Rowan Trees are steeped in English folklore, protection tree. You know, they're strong in cemeteries.
Yes.
But that's a good one. Also, we wanted to keep the nature connection thing because it had a bit of a Schumacher thing going in there.
Yes.
Which is a different subject. Resurgence, which is Satish Kumar's magazine. Yeah, we stopped that and things in there. So we kept it pretty similar.
Yes.
We just put our own little brand on it. So it's got the nature connection. It's got growing food, regenerative farming, things like that. It's got well-being, mindfulness, and nutrition. It's got arts and craft. It's got religion. It's got folklore, mythology, paganism, and Wicca. So it's very different than our shop, which is, I would say, more of a general bookshop.
Yes. Well, I'm very appreciative of the range of stock and associated stock that you carry here. I don't know quite how you do it, because I am aware of what a hard job stock taking is.
Keeping stock in is hard, isn't it? And it doesn't all come from one supplier, obviously. So.
And just the physical reality of heaving books around, they are heavy items.
Yeah, well, we're quite used to that, you know, when you're opening bookshops and you get, like, you know, 200 boxes.
Saves on gym membership.
It does, yeah, lots of carrying boxes up and downstairs as well, so I'm doing getting the steps in. Yeah.
Yes. That's right. Well, Nigel, thank you very much for talking to me about this bookshop, about how you came to open it. It was very interesting, and I wish you all the very best, as I'm sure everybody does. I always have tended to be judgmental about towns when I go into them, judging them how civilised they are based on whether they've got a good bookshop or not.
Yeah.
So I must end on by thanking you for keeping Totnes civilised.
Oh, no, great. Well, thank you, Totnes, for keeping us here.
Yes.
That was Totnes Talks with Paul Wesley and Nigel Jones. This was a Totnes Pulse production. Thank you for listening.